Pastor Yehuda de Teve, Rabbi Moshe Akiva Brandeis.
All yours.
All mine. Okay. Parshas Bahar is the parsha of Shemitah. So this year it's easy to focus on the parsha. It's not Bahar B'chol Kosai. I'd like to begin with two questions on the parsha. One is a Mishnah in Ovis. It's in Perek Hay Mishnah Tes. The Mishnah says, and let's see if we can find the odd one out. The Mishnah says that Golos comes to the world because of four things. Gil Arois, immorality, Avodah Zorah, Shvichas Domim, which is murder, and Shemitah. Which is fascinating. Gil Arois, Avodah Zorah, Shvichas Domim, the three cardinal sins, I understand. But Shemitah, how does that get into the list of reasons why Klal Yisrael are driven out of Eretz Yisrael and go to Golos? The second point is, there seems to be a connection, the Torah seems to be alluding to a connection between Shabbos and Shemitah. From the very beginning in Pasuk Beis, the parasha says, V'shavsa ha'aretz Shabbos Lashem. The land will rest, the Shabbos Lashem, and Rashi already connects it to Shabbos Bereshis, meaning Shabbos, the Shabbos that we have every week. The Ibn Ezra says the same, and then again, at the end of this parasha of Shemitah, once again the parasha reads, Es Shabsoisai to Shmoiru. There are those who learn it for Shemitah, but the Rishonim generally are learning this for Shabbos. Rashi and others, they're learning it for Shabbos. And the Rechaim actually points out, why is it that the Torah has to once again teach us about Shabbos? We already learn about Shabbos. There seems to be a connection between Shemitah and Shabbos, which is not only about seventh day, seventh year. So surely there's more to it. The Medrash says an amazing thought about Shomrei Shemitah, about the farmers who are keeping Shemitah. And the Medrash brings us into the mindset and into the world of a farmer who keeps Shemitah. The Medrash says, Omer Reb Yitzchak, on the Pasuk in Tehillim, Kuf Gimel Ches, Giboirei Koyach Oisei Devorei, warriors, strong men, who do what the Ribbono Shel Olam wants, is referring to Shomrei Shemitah. And says Reb Yitzchak, the normal thing in the world is that a person does a mitzvah for an hour, for a day, for a week, for a month, but here you have someone who's doing a mitzvah for a year. A year. And the Medrash continues, and I'll use the Medrash Tanchuma for this part. It says, Roye Sodeu Mufkeres. A man sees his field completely hefka. Anyone can come and take. He's not working with his field. His trees are hefka. His fences are breaking down and he can't fix them. He sees his fruit being eaten. I myself have been to an Estrog paradise before Sukkos to take a Estrogim. But think about it from the farmer's perspective. He has a field which he's been working on, investing on in so many years. If one of us has a shop, perhaps we can imagine leaving a, whether it's a bookstore or a supermarket or dry cleaning shop, whatever it might be, you have a shop and you have to leave it for a year. And it's just, besides for the fact that it just becomes with time a neglected place, a neglected house or a neglected field, certainly with a live field, becomes more and more spoilt. But besides that, people come in and take things. Here they're taking a shirt, a packet of bamba, or whatever it is. They're just taking stuff. Here I was just cutting up an estrog, which might be sold at £100, £50, £20, £500, and I'm cutting it off, choosing the nicest one, and taking it home. The Filipino guy there said to me, this is worth about $500, the one you just took. Aleph, aleph. He knows the halachas. He grades them every year. He said, that was an aleph, aleph estrog you just got. And he sees this and says the Medrash, V'koyvesh es yitzroi ve'enoi medaber. He controls himself and doesn't speak. Says Reb Gedalia Shor on this Medrash, or Gedalia on this week's parasha. He says, the Medrash is pointing something out here. It's not just about watching the field, become spoiled, watching people come in and take at will. There's something here about him watching it and staying quiet. And Reb Gedalia says, certainly it's more than just that he's frothing and fuming and he's boiling up inside and he just doesn't say anything to the people who come into his field. Certainly that's not what it is. And Reb Gedalia writes, the Medrash is telling us that he has an inner calm. He's watching this. It might be difficult and challenging to see his field completely die, to watch people coming in and take the fruit. And he works on himself with bitochen, with trusting that all is for the good and Hashem wants it to be well for him. V'tzivisiyas brichosi, there'll be a brocha in his fruit. And he works on himself until he has inner tranquility. If he's actually okay with the situation. Aziz Reb Gedalia, he says the point the Medrash is making is the v'shosak, the silence of the man who sees this happening to his field for an entire year. The Mishnah says in Avos, "V'leimotzosi laguf toiv mishtika." Perek Aleph, Mishnah Yud Zayin. I did not find for my guf, for my body, anything better than silence. This Mishnah needs explanation. If you say, as we're hearing here, if we say for your neshama, I understand. If you say for other people, it's the best thing sometimes when we keep quiet, I understand. If we're angry, we're able to control us. Why is it for the body? How is it good for the body? La guf, that's what he says. And I found nothing better for the body other than silence. The Sfas Emes writes, also brought down by Reb Gedalia in this week's parasha. The Sfas Emes writes, he brings from the Zohar, that la guf, what it's talking about is being able to be magbir, like the Gibor Rekoach, being able to strengthen the neshama over the guf. Being able to be in control of an instinct, of an automatic reaction, to react. And to thereby come to an inner calmness. And therefore we all know, every doctor will agree, that an inner calmness is good for the health of a person. We're not just talking about an external silence. An external silence is great for others, for our own self-control. But if we can get to a point where it's an inner calmness too, the shtika, where we'll be mad with an neshama over the guf, so we're actually feeling silent about a challenge or about a confrontation, and we're able to have an inner silence. So in the case of the Shemer Shmita, seeing his field go completely desolate, spoiled, dry up, people coming to take stuff, and to be able to stay calm, I found nothing better for the body, physically, than an inner calmness of the Baal Bitochen, of someone who knows all is how it's supposed to be. I want to bring a more recent story to illustrate this point. There was a boy who came back from a trip to Eretz Yisrael. Had been to Eretz Yisrael with his camera, and this is back to the days of film cameras, so I guess not so recent. But he came back from Eretz Yisrael having gone on this trip with his camera, and it must have been more recently actually. No, it was a digital camera, as you'll see in his story. He comes back from Eretz Yisrael with his camera, and he's very proud of all the pictures he's taken, all the places he's visited, and he's very nervous to give his camera to his younger brother to look at the pictures. He wants to see the pictures. Hence, it's obviously not a film camera. He wants to see the pictures. And he hesitates, he doesn't want to give it to him. He says it's very precious to him. It's a little boy. His younger brother pushes, insists. Eventually he says, but you have to be very, very careful. He goes onto the balcony. He's looking at the camera, and the inevitable happens. It falls off the balcony and it smashes into 1,000 pieces. He doesn't know how to tell his brother. He comes back inside. His brother starts sensing something. And his brother is about to explode. All his wrath is about to... And his sister, who's standing in the room, his older sister, says, I know you're about to explode there, the little boy, our brother. You know that I've needed a shidduch for so many years. And there's a tremendous bracha with someone who controls himself and stays calm. Would you do that for me? That's chus. Give me that chus. Stay calm. Don't answer. Don't say anything. Keep it all back to yourself. He runs into a room. He wanders into a room, spends several minutes there, controlling himself, finding his calmness, centralizing. He comes out and he's calm and he tells his sister, "I'm giving you this course." 2 months later, she became a Kala. It's a beautiful story. But what was it? It wasn't just a boy who had something to say and held it back. He worked on himself till he became calm inside, till he actually appreciated there's something bigger than this camera. The Ribbono Shel Olam. And he will, perhaps, give my sister a shidduch. If I'm able to stay calm inside, if I'm able to control myself and find an inner peace. He worked with bitochen, maybe without realizing it at his age, but he worked with bitochen to come to a point of understanding, okay, things can happen, challenges can be there, they can come our way, and we can stay calm. I want to take this to the next level, go a little bit deeper. The Maharal writes, menucha, calmness, serenity, can only be with someone who has shlemus, or something that has shlemus, wholesomeness, perfection. That's when real menucha comes. For example, 6 days of creation. He says Shabbos couldn't have come earlier than the seventh day. The world first had to be built, created, so to speak, until the last point of the sixth day, and only then could menucha come into place. Could peace come into place, serenity. There has to be perfection first. There has to be wholesomeness to bring to menucha. It's actually a Rashi in Bereishis, also Perek Beis, Pasuk Beis. Rashi says, as Shabbos comes in, Ma ha'olam choser, what was the world missing? What was still missing? Everything was there, the trees, the birds, the animals, the mountains, the valleys, the oceans, everything was created. What was still missing? Menucha. Ma ha'olam choser menucha. Bo Shabbos, bo menucha. Shabbos is not just a lack of work. It's not just a time where the Ribbono Shel Olam stopped creating the world. He has finished, and therefore, holiday time. Weekend off. It was a creation. What was the world missing, says Rashi? Menucha. So Hashem created a day of menucha, a day of peace, calmness, serenity. That's what Shabbos is. So a perfect world brings to menucha. A perfect people, Klal Yisrael, are the ones who can have Shabbos. Goy Sheshova, says the Maharal in Be'er HaGoyla, Chayev Misa. Why? He says because they're missing in that shlemus, in that wholesomeness, in a ruchnius digger level, on a spiritual level, and therefore it doesn't fit for a goy to keep Shabbos. However, a yid, Klal Yisrael, who are shlemim, who are wholesome, to them, Shabbos is befitting. And now the Maharal takes us to the concept of Shemitah. Eretz Yisrael is the most wholesome land in the world, he says. And he brings a pasuk in Devarim, Eretz Asher Lo Yisechzar Kol Bo. Eretz Yisrael is missing nothing. Eretz Yisrael is perfect. It's the perfect land. And therefore Eretz Yisrael needs to have this menucha every seventh year to have a peaceful year, a year where the farmer is not working on his field. And he goes as far as to say that since Eretz Yisrael, as a land of shlemus, a land of perfection, calls for this peace due to its perfection, if it's not done, if Klal Yisrael aren't keeping Shemitah, there's golus. There's golus. And he explains as follows. He says, the Mishnah tells us, the question we began with, reasons for Klal Yisrael to be driven out of Eretz Yisrael. That makes sense to us. Klal Yisrael are misbehaving. They don't belong in Eretz Yisrael. It's a punishment. They have to leave Eretz Yisrael. Shemitah is not as a result of the people. It's a result of the land. The land calls for this peaceful year. Someone who's perfect ends up being with tranquility. A person who's worked on himself and has a balanced life and he's able to see that all the challenges of life are there for his growth, are there for a reason, has a calm life. And therefore, the more wholesome it is, the more perfect it is, the more calm it is. Eretz Yisrael, as the perfect land, needs a Shemitah, needs every seventh year to be calm, needs it to be not worked on. And therefore, if Christ will haven't kept Shemitah, the land wants peace, the land wants a holiday every seventh year. And therefore, 70 years of Bavel were connected 70 Shemitahs that they didn't keep. Exactly 70 years for the 70 Shemitahs that Klal Yisrael didn't keep. They had to be in Bavel. I want my peace at Eretz Yisrael. I want my 70 years. You didn't give it to me? Okay, so leave. I'll have my 70 years now, and then you can come back. And then to our second question of the Shaychus between Shabbos and Shemitah is also understood now. Because Shabbos is also after 6 days of work, after 6 days of creation, and finally with the completion of the sixth day, we end up with a piece of Shabbos. But I have a question. How do we explain Shlemus? What is Shlemus? Is it perfection? Is Shlemus perfection? Is it that one needs perfection in order to have peace? I bring a medrash that proves the opposite. The medrash says, "Kol davar shakadosh baruch hu bara b'sheishes yimei bereishis torech tikun." Everything that the Ribbono Hashem created in the 6 days of creation needs to be fixed. In other words, the Ribbono Hashem built a world that needs a mechanic. It needs to be fixed. There's wheat that still needs to be ground, that still needs to be made into flour, that still needs to be made into a bread to be baked, which is difficult to understand. Couldn't the Ribbono Hashem make bread grow on trees? Couldn't we have a finished world? Everything seems to be needing to still be worked on. He says, Klal Yisrael are born without Bris Milah. One still needs to do Bris Milah on every child. Why didn't the Ribbono Hashem, if he wants Klal Yisrael to be Mohel, they could be born with Bris Milah. So he says, obviously, the Ribbono Hashem created a perfect world which still needs to be fixed. Let me explain. If someone walks into imagine a man walks into a big Lego store and he's holding this big box of Lego. It's got a picture of it. It's got a picture on the box of this big pirate ship with the flags, with all the details. Beautiful, big 3D piece. He comes in and he's fuming. He walks over to the till and he says to the fellow at the till, I ordered this box, I was hoping to enjoy it, and it's completely, completely messed up. He says, what's wrong? Perhaps we can refund. He says, no, I want a refund and compensation. He says, just tell me what's the problem. He said, it's all in pieces. Thousands and thousands of pieces. He says, is something missing? He says, no, everything was there. He says, what's wrong? He says, I see this beautiful picture of a ship with the flags, with all the details. I open the box and it's all in pieces. It hasn't been built yet. He says, this is what Lego is all about. You buy the pieces and you build it yourself. People don't want us to give it to them built. The Ribbono Shel Olam created a perfect world that still needs to be fixed, still needs to be built. The Ribbono Shel Olam created a world for us to build. To build the world further, to build ourselves further. And therefore, when we say that shleimus, wholesomeness and perfection, brings to menucha calmness, it doesn't mean perfection. It doesn't mean that the perfect person or the perfect world. It's talking about the perfection of the imperfection stage. At an imperfect stage. As we build ourselves, as we move on. The Gemara tells of Shimon Ha'am Suni. Who was the Shimon Ha'am Suni? He darshaned every S in the Torah. Every time it says S, he had a limud, he had a drosha to make from this word S. Coming to include something. Till he got to, so he spent a lifetime, every S he had already found a drosha for. He must have had a big set of volumes after he built up all his droshas from these S'in. He came to S Hashem Alekecha Tira, the posuk about fearing Hashem, and he stopped. He said, I can't find anything to include in Esa Shem Lekecha Tira. What can we include in fearing Hashem? What else could it... You can't... Nothing can compare to Hashem. And therefore he scrapped his whole work. His entire life's work of darshaning Es, put into Shemus. Came Rabbi Akiva, comes Rabbi Akiva, and he said, Es, Hashem Elokecha Tira, is coming to include Talmidei Chachamim. And Rashi says, just like we fear Hashem, we fear Talmidei Chachamim. Meira Rabach Kameira Shamayim. So I heard a beautiful idea on this Gemara. It goes as follows. What did Rabbi Akiva see that Shimon Hamsuni didn't see? Shimon was too fearful to add anything to Hashem Elokecha Tira. Rabbi Akiva comes and says, it's coming to include Talmidei Chachamim. Rabbi Akiva saw Shimon Hamsuni. He saw a person who's willing to take an entire life's work of dashing every S in the Torah and put it away and say, it's all wrong. I made a mistake. He was able to put the whole thing away and say, starting from scratch. Kishem shekabalti schar ala prisha kach ekabel schar ala drisha. Ala drisha kach ekabel schar ala prisha. Just like I received reward for having learned it all, prepared it all, written it all, I'll receive reward for refraining, for putting it all away, putting it into Shemus. When Rabbi Akiva saw the ability of a person to do that, he said, we can add Talmidei Chachamim. If a person can do such a thing, if a person can put away his life's work, there's godliness in him. And therefore we can say, Es Hashem Elokecha Tira, to be married with Talmidei Chachamim. To fear Talmidei Chachamim. Let's think about this for a moment. What did Shimon Hamsuni do? He was obviously someone who's Mevakish or Emma, searching for truth, absolute truth, and if it's not right, he was willing to give up on the whole thing. But where's the strength of a person to be able to do that? Where does that come from? I believe we can use our concept to explain Shimon Hamsuni's strength, perhaps. A person whose life is concentrated on doing what's right. And in all situations, like the man who watches his field in Shemitah become desolate, dry, and watch people come in to take the fruit, and he stays calm knowing, I'm doing what I'm supposed to do. It doesn't mean that in the sixth year he was finished his work. Just like on Friday, we may not be finished our work, we just stop. There might be 100 things we still have to take care of in business, at home. But whatever we're up to, whether the woman's made that kugel she wanted to make, or made her own chalas, or bought chalas, whatever she's up to, stop. The time comes, Shabbos comes. So where's the completion? Where's the perfection? The answer is, it's not about perfection that brings to this peace. It's about working towards perfection. And that's perfect. It's the Lego box that hasn't yet been built. It's perfect. He's left no refund and no compensation. It's a bunch of Lego bricks which haven't yet been built. That's how it's supposed to be. And when you see someone, you come into his house, he's halfway through it, and you say, looks like a mess. Where's the flag? I just see that some of the rooms have been built. It's lopsided. I'm in the middle of building my ship. I haven't finished. And sometimes he puts the wrong brick. And he might have spent a few minutes putting the bricks in place on his ship, and he has to take them off and put the right ones on. Like when you work with a puzzle, you thought that was a blue sky, but then it doesn't fit and you have to take a different one. So Shimon Hamsuni saw his whole life this way. Sometimes there's mistakes along the way. Sometimes he's halfway there. But he hasn't reached perfection. However, the imperfections are the perfection. This is how it's supposed to be. This is how you build the Lego ship. You don't get there before you start. So therefore, when he saw that all his essen were wrong, he had no problem to put it aside. He saw his whole life like this. It's all about trial and error. It's about making mistakes. It's about building and building further. I'll get schar for this. I tried. I'll get schar for this. I was in the middle of building my Lego ship and it was the wrong color. I have to start again. But I tried. In the world of the Ribbono Shel Olam, as long as we're trying, as long as we're building, that's what we need. So Shimon Hamsuni is able to do this. He's able to say, 50 years of work in Shemus. Start again. What's the problem? I get 50 years of schar. I'm still building my ship. So I put the wrong bricks. I put the wrong... It doesn't mean that my whole puzzle's gone because I put the wrong piece in place. I'll find the right one and continue. This is part of the puzzle. It's part of the Lego. It's part of the ship. When Rabbi Akiva saw that power, the gibor koyach, the strength of a person to put his neshama over his guf, as the Sfas Emes put it, he said, "As Hashem Elokecha Tira can come to include Talmidei Chachamim. If this is the power of man, if Talmid Chacham can get to this level, that his entire life is lived with this calmness, with a sense of purpose, as Hashem Elokecha Tira can actually include Talmidei Chachamim." That's what Rabbi Akiva saw. I want to share with you a story that I heard recently that brings out this point. That in essence, we're always building, and it's just that mistakes come our way, and that's part of how we build ourselves. It's a very powerful story. I heard it in the name of Rabbi Dudi Rosenberg from London, who has a Seder night in his home. He had a shver. He was a big Askenite in his time, Reb Chatzkel Besser. Reb Chatzkel Besser was a big Asken of the Agud in America. And Reb Dudi Rosenberg was leading the Seder, his father wanted him to. Until it came to one point in the middle of the Seder, Reb Chatzkel said, "I'd like to share a story with everyone here." On the words, "V'yareo yisonu ha-mitzrim." He said, "Why does it say, 'V'yareo yisonu ha-mitzrim'? It sounds like they made us bad. Not that they did bad to us. Oisonu means they made us bad. How do you understand that? Should it be they were wicked to us, not they made us wicked?" He said, "I want to share with you a story that happened to me." And he said this to his grandchildren, to Dudi Rosenberg, around the Seder table. And he says that this is after the war, after the Second World War, the refugees had arrived to America. And a man was caught several years after the war, having claimed the compensation from the Germans for 25 people. One was himself, the other 24 were killed in the war. This was serious money, it was a lot of money. Over the years, 25 people. And there was no way out, it was obvious. All the documents were there. He was claiming for 24 people who he had no right to claim for. The German government had already gotten the rights from the Americans to extradite him to Germany and to put him on trial there. And it was an obvious conclusion. There was nothing to discuss. And people came to Reb Chatzkel Besser, the great Askin, "Perhaps you can do something to save him." He said, "It's a very challenging case, but of course I'll try anything for a yid." He makes an appointment with the consulate general, the German consulate general in New York. He walks in, the woman is sitting there, and she says, "Rabbi, you know, after the formalities, hello, good morning, this is a closed case, there's nothing to discuss, you know as well as I do, the documents are there, everything's in place." He says, "Do you know the man?" She says, "I don't know him, but I know the case, and there's no two options here, there's nothing to discuss. It's just all black and white, it's all clear what he's done." He says, "I do know the man, let me tell you about him. He was 14 years old when he arrived in Auschwitz. And it was announced that anyone over 16 should come to this side. So there was a man who kindly just behind him knocked him and said, 'Say you're 16. He says, "It's a lie." He came from this very honest, he came from a beautiful home in Europe. His upbringing was, you don't lie, you don't steal. He knew nothing else. He said, "Lie. You've got to for your life." Puts up his hand, goes over to the other side. First lesson learned. If you lie, you live. If you say the truth, you die. He goes on, and they're asking everyone if anyone has a profession. He's going to keep quiet. And the man who notices this little boy who could get away with it, he knocks him again. He says, "Say something." He says, "But I don't, just say something. I'm a chef." Puts up his hand, "I'm a chef." "Right, to the kitchens." And they send him to the kitchens. Second lesson learned. You lie, you live. You say the truth, you die. And in the kitchens he sees that there's no way we're going to live. He won't survive, his friends won't survive with the rations that they get, so he slowly but surely works out ways of getting potato peels, carrots, into pockets without being noticed. And he takes it and he gives it to all his friends in the barracks as he gets home. He's in the kitchens, in the German kitchens, there's vegetables there, he's able to sneak him out. His third lesson's learnt. You steal, you live. You don't steal, you die. And he turns around to the woman and he says, "Who taught him these lessons?" "You did." And it's going to take him a while to re-educate himself. To go back to where he came from, to his source, to what he really is, to the family, to the upright and justified home he comes from. And there's nothing but just and righteousness. She said, "Rabbi, are you a lawyer?" "I have nothing to say." And eventually the case was completely dropped. Internally we're building up our ship. And there's mistakes on the way that creep in from the outside. Baruch Hashem, not as extreme in his case, but they do. And we make mistakes along the way as we're building the ship. But that's part of the process. Sheshes, Yomim, and then Shabbos. It was not a perfect world. At the end of the sixth day, it was the Olam Shetzorech Tikkun. Hashem made a world that needs a mechanic to fix it still. That needs us to process and make bread and food. Hashem could have made coleslaw salads grow from the ground. It didn't have to be the carrots over there and the cabbages over here. With the mayonnaise inside. Hayad Hashem Tekta. Bread could have been, why does it have to be wheat that's processed into a bread? Mila has to be done later. And our character also has to be built slowly. It's just the way it is. That's the purpose of the world. There's no refund or compensation. It just comes with a bunch of bricks that we have to build. And along the way, we get the wrong bricks in place, the wrong pieces of the puzzle. And that's part of it. That's the gadlus of Shimon HaMsuni. That is the greatness that he's able to see that. And that brings to perfect serenity. When a person realizes, this is bitochen at its element. When a person realizes that the imperfections of the world, the imperfection of the human race, is how it's supposed to be, is the perfect world, he comes to true inner calmness, true serenity. The real menucha, the menucha of Klal Yisrael that deserves Shabbos, the menucha of Eretz Yisrael, which with its shleimus, its wholesomeness, needs calmness, begs for its calmness, for its year of Shemitah. And a world which begs for Shabbos, because it's a perfect world with its imperfections. We are perfect at our imperfect stage. That's how it's built. And Yevamos Samach Beis Amid Beis, the Gemara tells us, the famous episode of the 24,000 Talmidim of Rabbi Akiva who died between Pesach and Shavuos. And I think we hear these words too many times, we're so used to it. 24,000 Talmidim died. I just think it's worth taking a moment to think about Yeshiva's Mir, for those who have seen it, and times it by five, but put them under one Rebbe. There must be hundreds or so Magide Shir and Mir. There was only one Rebbe Akiva, so I'm assuming they had a stadium for Shir with great acoustics. 24,000 Talmidim hearing Shir. Someone said, maybe they had two Shirim. Okay, deal. 12,000 seats in the stadium. He gave two Shirim a day. All one Rebbe and all died in one period. But the very same Rebbe Akiva, who understood that Shimon HaMsuni was so great when he's able to stay calm because he realizes that this is how the ship is built. I've written 50 books for the world to see and I'm putting it to Shemus and cancelling all the orders because it's a mistake. On such a person we can say as Hashem Elokech Atira to have Moira for such a person because he appreciates his imperfections that is perfect. That's the closest to godliness you can get. The very same Rabbi Akiva. He must have been devastated. It says the Olam Shomim is the Gemara's Nusach. The world was desolate. There was no Torah left. This was the yeshiva. Rabbi Akiva with his 24,000 Talmidim with the future of Klal Yisrael. What did he do? So the Gemara tells us, he went all the way to the Dorim, and he found five new Talmidim. Five Talmidim. And we've heard of them because the Gemara is full, the Mishnayos are full of these names. These are the people who we are learning with today, every day in our Shiurim. Reb Meir, Reb Yehuda, Reb Yaisi, Reb Shimon, and Reb Elazar ben Shamua. Five Talmidim. And he took them and taught them Torah. And the Gemara tells us that from these five Talmidim, all the Torah which eventually was learnt, and we're learning till this very day, is a result of that little Beis HaMedrash. Rabbi Akiva finding those five. But where, Rabbi Yisai, where? It's amazing. It's an amazing thing. It's fascinating that a person can do such a thing. Everything he's built for so many years has disappeared, and he starts again. But let's try and understand where this comes from. Where this gevura, where this amazing strength comes from. And I believe we could say it's the same thing again. Since as he was building, as he was teaching, as he was giving his shiurim, building his Talmidim, all those years, going from nothing, from the Amoraites wanted to bite Talmidei Chachamim, from poverty to real riches, as he was doing all that, as he was building, he understood this concept. And he did it all in a calm way. He did it all understanding that I'm building and building and building, and at the same time, mistakes happen. At the same time, things go wrong. It doesn't always go right. At the same time, even if I'm not there yet, it's still perfect. He understands that the imperfections on the way are just part of the process. And therefore, if they all died in one parent, and he may have felt, did I do something wrong? Perhaps I should have strengthened them all. Something's wrong with me. My entire life, all my work is gone. From Amoraites to Talmud Chacham to Gadol HaDor to 24,000 Talmidim has disappeared. And he turns around and he says, it's part of the process. Middle of building the boat. I used the wrong pieces. Continue. So off he goes and finds five Talmidim. And you know what? All the Torah we have today was from the attitude. From the attitude of understanding that the imperfections are the perfect world, the perfect man. The man who about which we can say, have a meira rabach kameira shamayim. But such a person can be said, fear him, like you fear Hashem. That's what Rabbi Akiva wanted to say about. A man who understands you can make mistakes and grow from them. Move on. And that's the Gibor Koyach of the Shemesh Shmita that we started with. He's called Gibor Koyach. Why is he such a warrior, the farmer? Because he looks at the field and he sees it's totally desolate, it's totally dried out. He sees people coming and taking his fruits and he's able to stay calm. It's part of the process. He understands that I may not have finished, but there'll be a mitzvah brichosi in one way or another. He may have questions, says the Pasuk. He'll ask the question, what's going to be? The calmness that you have knowing that whatever comes your way, understanding that the imperfect world, the imperfect stages are perfect. Hashem created a perfect world full of imperfections. And with this understanding, the farmer and all of Klal Yisrael come into Shabbos, and in the same way as the Torah itself compares it to coming to Shemitah. Shemitah, Shabbos, and in our lives we understand that it's an imperfect, perfect world.